Hello and welcome to the Microsoft Data Center Platform Vision, bringing Azure to your data center. Hopefully you've seen some of the key announcements in the Ignite keynote around the next generation of Windows Server, System Center, and the all-new Azure Stack. In this session, we're going to delve one level deeper into one specific area, networking. I'm Matt McSpirit, Technical Evangelist, and I'm pleased to be joined by Rajiv, who's a Group Manager in the Data Center Networking team. So Rajiv, tell me about some of the questions that customers are asking about their data center environments.
Matt, thank you for having me here today. Delighted to be here. Customers struggle with some very fundamental questions today, which are along the lines of what I illustrated in the slide over here. First, how can I make my network more responsive to the needs of my application? Second, how can I decrease the complexity and costs associated with what's traditionally inflexible and rigid networking? Third, how can I easily extend my on-premise deployments to the public cloud and enjoy the benefits of hybrid deployments? Fourth, what does this mean really in terms of evolution of my networking infrastructure? And can I do that necessarily without forklift upgrades to my existing investments? Basically, customers have business problems to solve, and they require increased flexibility, agility, mobility, elasticity, and security, and those are the needs that they want their computing infrastructure to deliver against.
Okay, so that gives us an idea of some of the challenges and the questions customers are asking of their own data centers, but how has Microsoft been trying to solve that challenge or that problem up to now with some of the technology in, for instance, Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2?
Those are great questions. These problems are not limited to our customers. We have wrestled with those problems ourselves as we have built out our public cloud implementation, which is Azure. As you are well aware, Azure today encompasses multiple data centers that are geographically distributed, that have over 1 million physical hosts, that have hundreds of thousands of customers or tenant deployments, and that have thousands of new applications or workloads that are onboarded on a daily basis. In order to be able to deliver against these demanding needs at hyperscale, we had to evolve the core set of computing infrastructure or technologies ourselves, and we've deployed them within Azure. And what we are doing is learning from those experiences and bringing those same set of technologies for our customers so our customers can deploy those within their data centers. Let's dive into the area of networking. In Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2, we delivered an exciting set of capabilities under the moniker of software-defined networking that can be used by our customers today for deployment within their data centers, and indeed are being deployed by many customers today in production. These capabilities span an implementation of overlay networking, which allows for tenant isolation, multiple tenants sharing the same physical infrastructure but having virtualized networks that are secure and isolated. Second, it also includes a distributed logical switch that is part of Windows Server and that's fundamentally extensible, and the ability to converse with the physical infrastructure using standardized mechanisms. We have, through the System Center 2012 R2, the ability to orchestrate for our customers to have orchestration, control, and management of their physical and virtual networks, and inbuilt gateways that allow for hybrid deployments spanning on-premise data centers, the service provider clouds, and then the Azure public cloud.
So I have a question relating to this graphic then. You mentioned overlay networks, and we can see we've got Fabricam virtual network, Contoso virtual network in the middle there. How does this differ from VLANs? What are these using VLANs, or is this something completely different?
That's a great question. So VLANs, if you take a step back and think about what do VLANs deliver, VLANs essentially provide for isolation on the same physical infrastructure for different workloads or for whatever the customer needs are. they have some inflexibility associated with them and some scale limitations. Overlay networking, in essence, allows for networking to be virtualized. It basically says, hey, for a certain customer, they can have their own network, in essence, that is co-located on the same physical infrastructure along with other tenants, but allows for the same security guarantees that VLANs did without having the kind of complexity, inflexibility, and lack of scale associated with VLANs. But overlay networking is not limited to just being a VLAN replacement. It does indeed provide for a true virtualized set of networking capabilities and policies associated with those virtualized networks that are that can then be completely abstracted from the physical network and therefore allow for workload mobility, whether that's in within the data center or cross data centers spanning both the on-premise deployments and third-party cloud-based deployments.
Okay.
Hopefully that gives you a sense of the capabilities that overlay networks provide and how they can augment and potentially substitute for VLAN capabilities that we are all familiar with.
Yeah, that's a good overview of how those overlay networks work. And I've noticed on the graphic as well on the slide, there's a number of other key building blocks or components that I think it's important for people to understand. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this Windows Server Gateway and what that delivers as a key component of our strategy here in this view?
Absolutely. This goes back to what we spoke about earlier, which is customers no longer want to be restricted to deployments that are limited by a certain physical geographical location, by a particular data center, or and they want to be able to easily consume clouds, whether those clouds are built by themselves or third-party clouds. Gateways allow for a set of capabilities that are needed to be able to truly have these hybrid deployments. So the inbuilt gateways within Server 2012 are to allow for NAT, allow for site-to-site traffic, and allow virtualized deployments to talk to the physical world. So let's assume for a second that you decided to deploy some of these capabilities, which is you had a overlay networking, a virtualized networking implementation, and you had multiple tenants. If these tenants want to consume some services that are out there or in the on the internet, for example, they can leverage these gateway capabilities and be able to talk to those external services. Or if you wanted to use the internet and have your applications span multiple data centers, even span your own data center and the Azure public cloud, you can utilize the site-to-site gateway, which is part of Windows Server 2012 R2. Or within your data center, if you wanted NAT capabilities, which you would potentially for your virtualized deployment, and you wanted to talk to machines where you had workloads that had not yet been virtualized, so you don't have to have an all or nothing kind of deployment, then you could use this built-in NAT gateway capabilities that are part of Windows Server 2012 R2.
Okay, so that gives us a good overview of what was enabled in 2012 R2, and I think it's important to have that conversation because it's still early in a lot of people's journeys around network virtualization. So having everyone on the same page about what we delivered in 2012 R2 is an important part to understand. But everyone's excited about the future. So tell us what in the next release, how does this all change? How are we changing the story? How are we improving with what we're bringing to market in the next release around networking specifically?
Absolutely. So what we continue to do is build on the core set of capabilities that were delivered in 2012 R2. And our key enhancements can be bucketed, so to speak, in these areas that are illustrated within this graphic. We focused on enhancements in the area of software-defined networking, enhancements in the area of network function virtualization. In fact, we are introducing a comprehensive set of capabilities over there, and then enhancements in the area of cloud scale fundamentals. And again, these are all learnings that we have experience in our building out of our public cloud, which is Azure. And many of these technologies are already deployed at large scale within Azure and now being brought, being delivered to our customers so they can deploy them in their own data centers on premises.
And I think that's a key point, that only Microsoft can deliver that kind of innovation, because Microsoft runs those data centers at such scale to deliver for so many customers that these kind of capabilities that get engineered are battle tested by the very nature of being in Azure. And we have the luxury of being able to bring those back on premises for customers who want to run it in their data center. Some of our competitors in the public cloud don't have alternatives on premises, so they're not in that luxurious position. Tell us about some of these capabilities we're bringing back on premises. Perhaps start with the SDN infrastructure. What are we doing in that space around the controller you referenced earlier and some of the management tools that we're also bringing to market?
Indeed. So let's start with that. Just to build on the point that you were making, we have an interesting phrase here at Microsoft, which is eating our own dog food. Well, we've eaten our dog food and then some over here. Let's talk about our enhancements in the area of SDN infrastructure. So within Azure, we have deployed at large scale a network controller that allows for a single point of control and management of the physical and virtual networking infrastructure. In Server 2012 R2, in conjunction with System Center 2012 R2, we delivered on network orchestration, control, and management capabilities. What we are now doing is bringing to market the network controller that has been deployed at scale within Azure. This network controller, basically, you can think of as having a standardized set of northbound interfaces. In other words, applications can talk to this controller and have the physical and virtual networking infrastructure respond to the needs of the application through a common set of interfaces that are easy to consume. That's the northbound interface. The controller is inherently extensible, so it allows for control of all physical and virtual infrastructure over time, including new capabilities we are bringing to market, such as the software load balancer that I'll talk about in a minute. This controller utilizes a standard set of mechanisms in order to communicate with the virtualized networking infrastructure in Windows Server, as well as with the physical network infrastructure that you may have already invested in. Which leads me to my second point. We have always strived to deliver or utilize a standardized set of mechanisms in our technologies in order to give our customers complete flexibility and choice. In Server 2012 R2, we enabled network virtualization or overlay networking using NVGRE as the encapsulation mechanism for traffic on the wire. We have now extended our interoperability with infrastructure from our partners, networking infrastructure from our partners, by supporting VXLAN in conjunction with NVGRE. So we do not believe that there's any value to our customers in having isolated islands of networking. We want to promote interoperability across all partner implementations, and we are striving to do that by not only supporting NVGRE, but VXLAN with our upcoming release. Similarly, In Server 2012 R2, we utilize a standard set of schemas and protocol, which is OMI, in order to communicate with physical and virtual networking infrastructure. We have now increased our interoperability by incorporating support for OVSDB in conjunction with OMI in this upcoming release. And we continue to improve our enhancements, our integration with SCVMM in the area of deployment, lifecycle management and orchestration, and with the Azure Pack as part of the Azure Stack for tenant self-service. So there's an exciting set of capabilities or enhancements in the area of SDN infrastructure in this upcoming release.
So in terms of that network controller, it sounds like it's going to be an incredibly granular but powerful component of our networking story, especially around SDN. You mentioned before that an application on the northbound side can talk to the controller and effectively tell it what it needs. Could you give us is there an example application that people may have in their data centers, or an example workload that you could give that would help illustrate that a little bit more?
Absolutely. So there are different classes of applications that you could conceive of that would want the network to respond to their needs. I'll give you a couple of illustrations. Assume for a second that you had a specialized networking application like the load balancer or like a firewall, and you wanted to manage those applications or control those applications through a standardized set of interfaces and a standardized set of abstractions. So for those networking, virtualized networking applications, the controller now enables a standard model, a standardized set of interfaces through which a data model and a set of interfaces through which anybody, a administrator or an orchestration engine, for example, SCVMM, or a set of capabilities such as the Azure Pack, which allows for tenant self-provisioning, can now consume the physical and virtual network without having to talk to individual components of the network. But it's not limited to that. In the past, Microsoft, for example, has demonstrated in conjunction with our partners how unified communications such as Skype for Business can be enhanced through the use of a richer set of communication mechanisms between the application, in this case the unified communication application, and the networking itself through a centralized control mechanism. And the network controller enables that in the future by having such critical, mission-critical applications utilize or communicate with the physical and virtual network through these northbound interfaces and, for example, do traffic shaping or traffic management and thereby deliver on better quality of service guarantees. So both specialized networking, virtualized network applications, as well as other mission-critical applications like unified communication type applications can now more easily communicate with the networking components, both physical and virtual, using a standardized set of mechanisms and thereby make the network more responsive to their needs.
Okay, great. So you mentioned before as well around this concept of network function virtualization. You know, there's server virtualization, there's network virtualization. We've now got a function word in there. What does that mean for people? What does network function virtualization mean in the networking story?
Absolutely, that's a great question. So historically, networking has not exactly been flexible. It's been rigid and inflexible. Contributing to that rigidity are the set of specialized physical appliances that provide critical functionality. For example, load balancers, distributed denial of services appliances, WAN optimization appliances, firewalls, other security appliances, and the like. Those are physical boxes that have to be positioned at exactly the right place within the network and do contribute to inflexibility. Now, with the advent of virtualization, these network functions, critical infrastructural components, are being virtualized. So they are increasingly being deployed as specialized appliances encapsulated within virtual machines that can be located anywhere within the within your data center, and then the traffic can be appropriately routed so as to so that your deployment, your service can be composed in the right manner using the right set of appliances, and you're no longer constrained by the physical location of such appliances. And that's what network function virtualization enables. What we are delivering in this upcoming release is core infrastructure that allows for service composition via tenant-defined service chaining, so you can take these virtualized appliances, construct your service, specify your policy and your set of rules for how traffic should be routed through these set of virtualized appliances, and then instantiate that within your data center, and thereby gain tremendous flexibility, agility, and scale as well within your data center. And that's what we are enabling. This is not limited to just application workloads within your data center. Other areas or verticals where this can be exploited is, for example, in the service provider business, in the telecommunications vertical and the like, where you can imagine networks being constructed, networks of the future being constructed using these virtualized appliances and through service composition. What we are bringing to market in this upcoming release are also a key set of what we call first-party virtualized appliances. So within Azure, we've developed a brand new load balancing capability that we are now bringing to market. We've already deployed it at very large scale within Azure. We're bringing to market a distributed firewall capability that builds on the set of capabilities that we delivered in Server 2012 R2. And then we are working with partners within the industry so they can take their best of breed appliances, virtualized appliances, and then fit them within this service chaining infrastructure so our customers can use that. And then we have significant investments in Linux, for example, to ensure that these third-party virtualized appliances deliver best-in-class performance when deployed on Windows infrastructure within your data center.
Okay, cool. So if we think about some of those key things you've mentioned there around load balancers, I'm guessing the control and the distributed firewall as well. I'm guessing the controller controls most of those. That's your central point of management for those key functions. Is that right to assume?
Absolutely. So the whole point here is to have a logically centralized point of control that is scalable, that is inherently scalable, that allows for control and management of all of these capabilities, regardless of whether they are physical or virtual. So precisely to your point, the network controller indeed provides against those, delivers against those promises and provides this kind of central control mechanism that abstracts away these individual kind of components. And so, for example, our network controller enables control of this brand new software load balancing capability, which is not the old NLB, and this new distributed firewall capability, and is extensible, allowing for control of third-party components as well in this logically centralized manner.
Okay, so you mentioned the software load balancer, and I had a question on the tip of my tongue around, is it like NLB from past versions of Windows? And you've said no. But then this firewall intrigues me as a Hyper-V guy, because we get a lot of questions around Hyper-V and what do I do around firewall? Is there a virtual firewall built in? Can I apply policies at the vSwitch or the vNIC and all these different levels within the VMs, outside the VMs? How is this distributed firewall different perhaps from the Windows Server firewall that exists within the OS today? And what does it enable for a virtualized infrastructure?
Absolutely. So our objective here is pretty simple. We want to deliver against the security needs that are associated with complex distributed application deployments in a scalable manner within your data center and cross data center. So instead of focusing on security on a per host basis, what the network administrator really wants to do or what the application administrator really wants to do is specify policies associated with their application that is composed of multiple virtual machines that might be located on multiple physical hosts and even span clouds, even span data centers. And that's what the distributed firewall indeed enables. It enables granular security policy enforcement on a per application basis, regardless of where components of those applications are located at any given point in time, and thereby enabling a lot of flexibility while providing for the security needs associated with that application.
Okay, so an example application might be SharePoint, where, for instance, it's hopefully in a production deployment spread across multiple virtual machines. Those VMs need to communicate on different ports, so app to database server, web front end to app, and so on. I'm guessing that I could create as an administrator a policy that reflects that need for the communication on different ports and apply that through the distributed firewall. Is that correct?
That's a great example. In fact, you can take any one of your standard three-tier or multi-tier application deployments that include SharePoint, a back-end repository such as SQL Server, front-end web servers and the like, and these might be scaled out so you have multiple instances of any one of them, any one of the tiers, and then you could associate policies with the components of any given tier, security policies, and then have them enforced through this distributed firewall. So that's a great example.
Okay, great, excellent. Before we move on to the cloud scale fundamentals, you touched on something that that a lot of people out there won't be perhaps as familiar with, and that's around Linux on Hyper-V, Linux appliances, Linux-based network appliances. Can you give us a little bit more information about what that looks like? What are our partners doing in this space, for instance, around Linux appliances?
Absolutely. So historically, networking appliances are based on various flavors of Linux, and not just limited to Linux. There are other operating system variants, but certainly variants of Linux. Mm-hmm. And those include best-of-breed appliances in the area of load balancing, best-of-breed appliances in the area of security, distributed denial of service, best-of-breed appliances in the area of WAN optimization and the like. And our endeavor is a no-compromises approach in terms of our customers' ability to utilize these best-of-breed appliances in conjunction with our service chaining capabilities on Windows infrastructure. So for quite some time now, we here at Microsoft have been investing substantively in improving the Linux kernel, for example, to deliver against the performance and availability characteristics of these Linux-based specialized networking virtualized appliances, so that they can run best in class implementation on Windows infrastructure, and that's indeed what we've done.
And that could be on premises on Hyper-V, or it could be in Microsoft Azure, because many of them are available in the gallery already.
That's a great point. In fact, a reasonable percentage of appliances or workloads running on Azure today or on-premise are Linux, just as there are Windows, and indeed all of them benefit from these contributions that we are making to ensuring best-in-class performance.
Okay, cool, excellent. So when we think about that final pillar that Rajiv introduced before around cloud scale fundamentals, what does that mean? Are we just talking about big stuff? Are we talking huge scalability or what, performance? Enlighten us a little bit more about this cloud scale fundamentals.
Absolutely. Fundamentals, as you're well aware, encompass performance, encompass availability, encompass the ability to have decreased complexity through the use of a converged fabric, and we've invested in all of these areas. An interesting area of innovation within the industry is the advent of capable merchant silicon. So, for example, silicon from industry partners partners that is becomes part of a NIC, and those NICs are very capable in terms of being able to utilize certain offloads or do offload processing to deliver great performance. And so we've invested considerably in interfacing with these very capable NICs at very low cost, and make real for our customers to be able to utilize very high-speed networking in the future, going from 10 gig to 40 gig to 100 gig in the future. Let me give you some tangible examples. In Windows Server 2012 R2, we enabled utilization of RDMA, which is offloads within the NIC, to have low latency and low impact on CPUs hosting applications or workloads when they are accessing storage, disaggregated storage. So you have these clusters of computing, clusters of storage, and potentially industry standards or commodity storage behind them, and very low latency access to the storage. In Server 2012 R2, you had to have different NICs for tenant traffic, and then a specialized set of NICs that would allow RDMA-based storage access. In this upcoming release, we allow for a converged fabric with the same set of NICs that can be used for both tenant traffic and this RDMA-based storage access with quality of service guarantees. And then we've also invested very significantly in better performance in terms of packet processing. So historically, in the past, we have, for example, been capable of processing hundreds of thousands of small, say 64-byte packets per second per core, which was impressive in itself, and we've improved that by an order of magnitude, where we now enable processing of millions of packets per core, small packets per core, with this upcoming release, which is very useful when you think about software appliances such as the load balancer or distributed denial of service, or if you really want to deploy 40 gig and 100 gig networking without any compromises. So a significant set of enhancements over there. And then we have also invested in enhancements in the area of cloud DNS. So for example, geolocation awareness and traffic management, and substantively improved IP address management capabilities, both in planning and management as well. We are building on the core set of capabilities in Server 2012 R2, and we've enhanced them considerably now.
Great, thank you. So that's a lot of stuff across software-defined networking, across the network function virtualization, and some of the fundamentals around performance. And especially from a performance perspective, having been in the lab with some of these RDMA cards and working with our partners, the performance is just blindingly fast. It's incredible. And you really start to see big benefits when you start to implement some of these key technologies in the software-defined data center. But that brings us to the end of this session. Hopefully you found it useful. We focused on the Microsoft Data Center Platform vision, bringing Azure, bringing those learnings to your data center, and in this session specifically focused on networking. So thanks to Rajiv for joining us, and please make sure you check out some of the other sessions as part of this course, focus on the other areas of the data center, compute, storage, services, and so on. So please join us then. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.